Hey, everybody. Episode 3, Invisible Airwaves. This is Alex.
This is Chris.
We're back. It's been a while since we recorded one, but we promised we were going to keep doing this, and we want to keep doing it, so here we are.
Yeah, and like I feel like, for once, we have a pretty damn good excuse. Like, a lot of things just fall off because people are lazy and don't follow through with things. But like, I was buying a fucking house.
Yeah. You were legitimately busy.
There was like a lot of shit going on. So, you know, we had to take a little bit of time off of it, but we did want to keep going and keep talking about music and shit.
Yeah, and then it was Thanksgiving, but...
Thanksgiving and Halloween and, yeah, you just, you know, life is life and there you have it.
But, yeah, we're back today. We got another album coming up. Chris picked it this time.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bathory by Bathory.
Self-titled debut.
Self-titled debut of one of the... better metal bands out there and one of the first black metal bands.
Yep, but we'll get to that in the second half after our break. We're going to start out, though, by something, talking about something the separation of art from artists.
Yeah, and it's kind of appropriate since we're talking about black metal later.
That's what I was trying to say a second ago. It's going to segue into that, but...
Because it comes up a lot in black metal where, like, the second wave was literally, you know, part of their history is the fact that they went around burning down churches and, like, one motherfucker just stabbed the other one a bunch. And, you know, they're just, like, deplorable characters.
And,
so.
And you can find things like, maybe not those specific examples, but across genres, people that were pieces of shit, by all accounts, in their personal lives that made some really good music.
Yeah,
and how do you reconcile those two things?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's kind of tough. On the one hand, you want to say that the music is a reflection of the person. And like to some extent, when you're listening to music, you're jiving with that person who created it too. It's like a personal experience. But do you want to be jiving, so to speak, with someone you consider to be like the complete opposite of you in every way? And on the other hand, though, you say, well, they still made really good music. So,
yeah,
like, can you just appreciate it as art and not consider the fact that the artist was a piece of shit?
Yeah, I think it's case to case. But in general, I would say I'm an advocate of, you know, letting the art stand on its own for the most part. Mm-hmm.
And I think I am, too. I kind of waffle on it, though, because there are some specific examples where I don't want to do that.
It can be a stretch.
So the classic example I have, again, in black metal, there is a movement called NSBM, National Socialist Black Metal.
Okay.
It's a bunch of Eastern Nazis. Europeans who literally make black metal in the support of Nazis.
I fucking hate metal Nazis.
Yeah. And I've just made a personal choice. Like, I'm not going to, like, stand against it or whatever, but I'm also not going to seek that out. I don't particularly want to support Nazis.
Now, I can only imagine that their music and lyrics is about Nazi and racial themes also, right? So
yes.
That I think that makes that a pretty easy easy thing. Well, let me say,
okay.
As somebody that's not racist, it makes it easier for you to turn away from that music, I would think, even if let's say the riffs or whatever are good, if they're singing about being Nazis, like... I don't think it's too difficult to turn that off, as opposed to, like, let's say that somebody writes completely Nazi-free lyrical content and good riffs, and then you find out that in their personal life they're a Nazi. Like, that's more difficult, and I think that's what we're talking about. But so go ahead and what you had a response to that about how even though they write Nazi lyrics,
well, with black metal in particular, you know, maybe if it was rap or country or whatever, it would like make a huge difference. But it's not like I can tell what the lyrics I'm listening to are anyway.
Okay, that's a good point, because if they're not clear, you don't know that they're singing about Nazi shit.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So that's where
good
the
counter
thing comes in there.
Good counter.
Thank you.
But yeah, and I would still say though, to an extent, even if you know they're singing about Nazi stuff, it's even worse than if they're just singing about, like, I don't know, anything else, and they happen to be Nazis. You know what I mean?
Then later you go, oh, no, wait, they were talking about Jews there.
Right.
Oh, shit, man.
Or if it was like really heavily coded.
Right. Well, that's what happens sometimes. I don't know if this has ever happened for you, where you start really liking an artist. You listen to their music a lot and you're like, Jesus, this is so good. I wonder what this guy's like. Like, where's he from?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, ah, fuck, he looks at kid porn. Like, God damn it. has anything like that ever happened for you?
Well, I don't know to that extreme, but that's funny that you specifically said kid porn because, like, I've never listened to this band, but have you you've heard of Lost Prophets or at least have heard of this controversy?
Not that, the controversy, but them, yes.
That dude is like an infant rapist.
What?
Yeah, look this up. The guy from Lost Prophets has been like charged and everything. Like,
that's insane.
Fans were like, they have emails of him with fans that are like, I'll bring you my kid. Like, I'm pretty sure.
Holy shit.
I've read about this on Reddit, and people have linked to, like, some of the court transcripts, and it's some really dark stuff. Now, I've never heard their music, but, like, can you imagine if you were really into that band? And I've seen people comment this. Like, they were my favorite band, things like that. Holy shit. I don't know how I'd feel if I found out that, like, I don't know.
Paul McCartney
or Geddy Lee or somebody, like, was a Bill Cosby. Like, what would you do? Like, that? I think that would be really hard.
I think that it would be enough to ruin it for me, probably.
Yeah, it really could. Hasn't happened to me personally, but I think it could.
Have you tried watching The Cosby Show since that happened?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty tough.
I wasn't a huge fan of The Cosby Show. I mean, I
wasn't either.
I watched it as a kid, reruns and stuff, but it wasn't like some personal thing to me.
It wasn't like, for me either, but at the same time, you just watch certain episodes, and you're like, yeah, but you rape people.
I've seen clips of like weird vibes.
Oh, like the secret barbecue sauce.
That's so weird.
Super weird.
So weird. But I think at the same time, I've heard people talk about how in as far as stand-up comedy goes, though, some of his early stand-up specials are so influential and so good. As
I believe that.
Like, he still contributed so much to the art. I mean, we're steering outside of music here, but I think this is still relevant.
It's relevant.
Like, that's a really good example because Cosby is like a pioneer of his art form.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, everybody came out was influenced by him.
Right.
Like, it's really hard. So I'm trying to think, what's the worst music example of somebody that's big? You know what I mean? Like, that Lost Prophets guy is one of the most heinous crimes, but, like, of somebody that's a big guy.
Big, it's harder. I mean, I guess R. Kelly.
Well, I was going to say, R. Kelly, I thought of R. Kelly. Like, and I was going to say, you know, I might be a little bit of a hypocrite when I say that there's got to be a line, because if I'm going to make a party playlist, I'm going to put Ignition Remix on
right
it, even though that dude is a probably, and I shouldn't even say probably, like, by all accounts, a child predator, like
what's
a sexual
kind of
predator.
Weird, though, is to some extent I feel like it can also add to the lore of an artist, like, if enough time has passed, because that happens with the second wave black metal guys.
Yeah because it was a while ago and it's a part of their whole, like,
exactly,
mystique, and like
so you listen to it almost in a historical sense, just to be like, what were these guys about?
That's true.
What was their music like?
That's a really good point, and I think that plays into hip hop.
Yeah,
Tupac and Biggie.
Yeah,
criminals,
for sure.
Criminals,
just straight up criminals.
And a bunch of people associated with that whole, like, East Coast West Coast movement, like, mm-hmm, fucking murdered each other over
right
that shit. But yeah, that absolutely plays into the music, because you believe that Biggie Smalls was a fucking drug dealer in the streets in, you know, New York, like.
And with R. Kelly, isn't he the one who also did Trapped in the Closet?
Yes.
I feel like watching Trapped in the Closet with the context that he pissed on girls, that improves it for me.
If you told me when we started this podcast that we would have ever mentioned Trapped in the Closet on our music podcast.
I've watched it, not all of it.
Oh, there's
before
so much. I don't think anybody's watched all of it.
No.
That's still coming out. Like, I'm pretty sure
really?
He's still making that.
That's
shit.
That's incredible.
That dude is insane.
He's
yeah
completely insane.
Okay.
And because he's so insane, because Trapped in the Closet is so insane, it matches the persona of a guy who would piss on teenagers.
That's a really good, yeah, I agree. Like,
so it's like, I don't like that you do that, but okay.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, it relates to what you were saying about how it influences the art, like, who the person is, because that insanity, like, inspires creativity in some people. Like,
that's true.
Think about how many people are pretty off the rocker. I haven't mentioned him yet, but it's relevant to all of this. I was going to John Lennon.
Yeah.
Like, beat his wife.
Oh, that's not great.
You weren't aware of that?
I wasn't aware.
It's so funny because anytime John Lennon comes up in, like, an online discussion now, somebody will inevitably point that out to the point. There's an Onion article that says, like, man gets a little rush of satisfaction from pointing out John Lennon beat his wife. Because
okay
it's such a common thing to, like, try to call him out.
That's
now
interesting. I had no idea somehow.
So, yeah, he, there's some different stories on it, but basically he at least admits to, like, hitting his first wife when they were young and, like, you know, in and stuff like that. But he did come out and basically admit, you know, I was wrong about this. I've been violent in the past. Like, oh, okay. I want to change.
He was remorseful.
Yeah. And so I think that takes in some of it, you know, that's something to take into account.
That
when you
helps.
View him.
It makes a difference.
So I think that's a good example of like a really, really, really big influence in music. I mean, John Lennon has some skeletons in his closet. In addition to that, the way he treated his first kid, kind of, he had a wife and had a son when the Beatles were huge.
Uh-huh.
And the record company didn't want it out when he first got married. They didn't want people to know that he had a wife because that would make him less appealing to the teenage
because
girls.
He was like the teenage heartthrob.
Yeah, they
or
want all the girls had their favorite Beatle, and right. if one of them was married, that would make him less attractive. So
interesting.
And with, you know, being on tour and being like basically one of the most famous people in the world, he was not around for the first son very much at all, and that like caused a lot of problems.
That
and
makes
then
sense.
When he married Yoko and had a second kid, he totally was like a father and raised that kid like, you know, he was around, and so people criticize him for that, too.
So the first kid kind of got the shaft in a way.
Right, to the point that, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, I know you don't love the song, but Hey Jude,
uh-huh.
Paul McCartney wrote that as Hey Jules for Julian Lennon, John's first son.
Oh.
Paul wrote Julian a song to basically be like, you know, encouraging him, it's going to be all right, take a sad song and make it better.
Oh, like, sorry, man, I didn't mean to be that shitty to you.
Well, Paul wrote it for John's son.
Oh,
that's
I see.
That's the funny part, is that John didn't write
it.
Okay. Paul wrote a song for John's son to like make him feel better about the situation that he was
Oof.
In. Yeah, right, right. So, you know, but I'm still going to listen to the Beatles. I'm still going to listen to John's solo records. But yeah,
right.
I think the fact that he had come out towards the end of his life and said, you know, I feel bad for the way I acted when I was young, and like I've tried to change the person that I am.
Well, and to some extent too,
you have to grant people that.
You don't
ability.
Want to be too apologetic, but you also want to recognize that
acknowledgement.
Yeah, and that people are people. No one is perfect. And if you really want to, if you wanted to, you could find something to dislike about any artist.
For sure. Like, that's why I have to, politics, a lot of artists are pretty crazy
right.
in right or left in their politics.
Right.
And that's one of the ones you just kind of have to shut off, I think.
Pretty much.
Because some of them just say such out there stuff.
Yeah, like, I definitely listen to some bands that aren't like, really right wing, but they do fall into like the category of right wing that is ultra supportive of free speech to like an extreme amount and things
okay.
of that nature.
Pretty influential in rock. Ted Nugent is
yeah,
pretty
exactly.
pretty crazy right wing. I mean, I don't think he's a Nazi or anything, but he's pretty far right.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But he's still a pretty fucking good guitar player and still has some pretty good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you just say, like, well, okay.
Yeah, he's kind of a nut job, and maybe
I
won't go see
a show. He's just going to be really conservative.
Right, and maybe I won't go see a show because you know he's going to rant about Donald Trump.
Oh, does he?
I think he does, like, he does political things in his shows. Like, Roger Waters does the exact opposite. Like,
right.
Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, his whole show is how Trump is, you know, building the wall, and so it's perfect, really. It fits right in with Pink Floyd, but his show is super political, and it's funny, I've seen people get pissed off when they go, and they're like, oh, his whole show was just a left wing. It's like, why'd you go see fucking Roger Waters?
You knew that going in.
To the album at home if you don't want to see his big Trump is a Nazi signs, you know?
Right, right. It is kind of a shame, though, even then, this kind of leads into the question of artists putting those values into their lyrics and into their shows.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent does that turn you off or perhaps even attract you to it, that they put these like very real world serious messages in that they have like a strong conviction about
mm-hmm.
one way or another?
Like politics in particular or just their own personal
politics,
feelings
about politics, save in
okay.
Religion, but in a very
yeah.
direct way.
Okay. Yeah,
things
that's
like that.
That's a good point. I feel like I can still, if it sounds sincere, And I like the music, and the lyrics are well written. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's something I don't agree with, I can still appreciate it. I think it's easier for me to find examples of religion than politics. But like I've mentioned before, I really like the Avett Brothers. They have some straight up religious references, name dropping, like
yeah.
the Savior. And there's like lines in their songs like, just know that the kingdom of God is within you, and things like that I totally don't believe in my personal philosophy. But I think that they believe it. They're not like pandering.
Yeah, they're sincere at least.
They believe it. It's well done. I like their music. Like, so yeah, I can look past that.
That definitely makes a difference, just how it's implemented, because there's a right way and a wrong way. What I was going to bring up, though, is one of my favorite bands, Protest the Hero.
Mm-hmm.
they do a lot of things related to real world shit, and they do so intentionally. Like they've stated in interviews, hey, we want to be addressing things in the real world that matter to people today. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want to just write about some ethereal bullshit that doesn't really have meaning or whatever. They want to talk about things that are meaningful right now.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, it does not come off well, if I'm totally honest.
Right.
They have this one song. It's like fucking killer. It's called A Life Embossed off of Volition. And it's this really heavy song that's like a lot heavier than all the other songs on the album. So it feels like an homage because it goes back to like their older stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, or for most of it, the lyrics, like, you don't really catch anything. They're just kind of going by as normal lyrics. But then at the end of it, it turns into this weird, like almost a ballad. And the lyrics are literally like, I'm proud of every pit bull, but ashamed of my own country and shit like that. Because it's about pit bull regulations in Toronto. And they were trying to ban them as a breed.
That's a really specific topic to write a song about.
Exactly.
But,
and
yeah,
it's like,
if they feel it. But yeah, I see what you mean.
For the lyrics, for like the first half of the song, it's just totally fine because in that context, you can understand it, but it's not like literally shouting that to you.
Right. Yeah. And how heavy-handed it is.
Right. Like, can you ever see yourself at a concert going, I'm proud of every pit bull, as
no,
they're like
no,
playing
that's
its
ridiculous.
Song loud.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So I love them, but that totally takes you out of it.
Do you remember when Paul Ryan said he listened to Rage Against the Machine?
Yes.
And a lot of people thought that was just really funny.
It was really bizarre.
But it's like, I get it. A lot of people just fucking headbang to that shit.
Yeah,
and
he probably has no idea.
Well, even if he listened to it, I still don't necessarily think that has to be a conflict. Even
yeah,
if he listens to the words. If he's just like, yeah, this is awesome. This is rocking. Like, these guys are badass. They mean what they're saying.
Right.
I think he could still enjoy it, even if he didn't agree with their politics. But I thought it was funny that they called him out on it. But I got to say, though, with respect to artists and politics, I think a lot of them are just kind of, none of them are any more educated necessarily on the issues than anybody else is.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it's funny that so many people put stock into what they're saying. Like,
it is interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't give it, like, a lot of people praised Taylor Swift for coming out after being pretty apolitical for her whole career. She came out and endorsed some Democratic candidate in like Tennessee or whatever. Some people were mad, but I saw a lot of people saying it was good that she was coming out and stating a political opinion. But I was like, why is that good? Like, I don't give a shit what Taylor Swift thinks. She's
right.
Not any more important. She's no authority on politics, and I shouldn't base, nobody should base what they're doing on Taylor Swift's fucking political opinion. That's my opinion.
Well, I think a lot of the people who would paint it as positive would just be the people who agree with her. They're basically saying,
yes,
she
has a lot
of influence.
That's my thought,
She's saying this thing I agree with, so that is good.
That's my thought, too, on it.
But at the same time, though, to some extent, like, there is a right way to deliver a political message, and I can understand why someone with that large an audience and reach would want to make an impact in any way they can.
Sure.
I don't
have a problem with her saying it. I just think it's funny that people like put so much stock
into it. I get you.
Just because she's, you know, she's a musician. She's rich. She doesn't know what you need or want.
Yeah, she like, doesn't know anything about you.
Right. You know, and like this Rage Against the Machine specifically, I think they're kind of funny with their whole anti-capitalist, eat the rich attitude. But if you look up,
but it's like
how much
them,
is Tom Morello worth? How many t-shirts does Rage sell? Like,
right.
You know? It's,
their record label's dream.
That's why I'm not going to necessarily listen to what Tom Morello says about politics, even if I might like some of their songs, which I do like some of their songs. Like, they have some badass songs.
Right.
I don't care what they think about politics, and I can still like their songs. I guess that's my point.
You can separate it to some extent, though,
sure.
Because like, if you go back far enough, you'll be listening to albums and demos where that wasn't the case.
Right.
And I think actually this is kind of off topic, but I do think that's part of the reason that that people always say like, oh, I prefer the old albums or I prefer the demos. But it's like that's when they're writing it at their rawest form.
Yeah.
You know, where the band hasn't been influenced by like the quote-unquote machine of the music industry.
Right.
And like if they happen to get popular or famous or whatever, that hasn't influenced them in any way. So you're kind of getting like just dudes from this city and their perspective on life as like real people.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I think it makes sense. It's kind of a hard transition for somebody that does have a message like Rage Against the Machine does, because they start to get recognition. Like, do they stay? Do they have to like stay underground? It was funny. We were watching a movie the other day called Green Room, about a punk band that gets trapped in the Nazi bar. I mentioned it.
Interesting.
And at the beginning, they're giving an interview to like a magazine or something, and they're saying how like, oh yeah, we don't have social media because like that's too like, you know, it's not real, like it's supposed to be just experienced live. And if you and it was just funny, like they were kind of like so like hipster and like so anti corporate, like that they didn't even have like a social media following. It was, I think they were kind of trying to make a joke about how like it was to their detriment.
Right, right.
Especially what happens later, the fact that they don't have a big social media following and a bunch of people that know them at the show works out in their disadvantage. But
that's interesting. I'll have to look that movie.
Yeah, I totally. It's a good. It's tangentially related to music, but it's also just a good like thriller.
Sure,
Anyway,
so let me ask you this: are there any bands or artists or whatever that you specifically don't listen to because of their message or ideals or whatever?
That's a good question. I can't think of anybody in particular that I'm like, I won't listen to them because their personal stuff is so toxic. You know what I mean? I don't think... No, there's definitely ones like you said that like I wouldn't if I came across them, like the really, you know, Nazi metal stuff. But that's just something that I don't come across much anyway.
Okay,
I think so.
Enough.
It's just easy to not have to avoid intentionally.
It's kind of unfortunate. Maybe I'm learning that this just happens to happen more in metal.
Well, I think with that particular scenario of somebody just being really extreme political and hateful, I think it's unfortunately that is part of the metal.
That just comes along with it.
Yeah, for some reason, because it's an extreme genre.
It is. You also get, there's another band, Inquisition. They're a big name in black metal. And for a while they were really looking to like cement their place in the modern scene and the modern mindset for like what black metal is. And then like it came out recently, I think this year or something, that the dude was watching kiddie porn.
Yeah.
And it was like, ah, man, like that just really sucks.
That's fucked up. Yeah. Like,
I don't know. I'll still listen to them because of how important their music was for a lot of bands. But I also don't, like, feel the need to buy merch from them and shit like that.
Definitely. You don't have to, like, go out of your way to, like, support them. You don't have to stop listening to them altogether, but you don't have to, like, keep actively.
The truth is, streaming their music helps them so little these days.
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's, like, effectively the same as bootlegging it.
Right. Has anybody else gotten Me Too'd? I was just Googling it. The guy from Brand New, you know who that is?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
They're kind of like punkish, I think. But that guy has a couple like sexual assault or rape accusations. What was the band that you mentioned? Bright Eyes.
Oh,
too.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that one.
It's honestly not surprising to me that that would occur a lot with bigger bands, because you get the one specifically like that too, where they get kind of worshipped by some people, and you know, specifically young influential girls.
Yeah, they have some like kind of power.
Yeah.
And they take advantage
and
of it.
And they I could see
well,
them
it's
like
the same situation,
oh, hey, come
as in
backstage with us.
Same situation like Hollywood, you know. You're in those positions where people that want to do that can take advantage of the situation. So it's going to happen, unfortunately.
We are currently at 23 minutes. You want to call that a first segment?
Yeah, we'll take the break here and then we'll get into the album.
All right. Excellent.
All right, we'll be back.
Back with episode 3 of Invisible Airwaves. I'll just throw this out there. My wife left a few seconds ago, and that means the dogs are in the attic recording with us now. So
might be some barks.
There may be some barks. I'll try to edit them out so that I don't assault
your
ears.
No, leave them in.
Leave them in. It'll be so authentic. Okay, so we are here to talk about Bathory's self-titled debut. Came out in 1984. I don't have any idea if it was on an actual record label, but it was effectively considered by a lot of people to be the first black metal record. So that's why I picked it. It's a super influential album. Basically, if it's to the level where if someone tells me that they like extreme metal, but they haven't listened to this, I'd be like less inclined to believe their opinion on anything. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, are we gonna get back into the elitism discussion?
I know that was like a shitty thing to say, but
I see what you meant.
It's that influential, you know. It's just a huge, huge testament for underground metal. Now, I also acknowledge, though, that this was going to be a more difficult one for you because it is extreme metal. It's one of the early extreme metal albums, which means, you know, regular record labels with, like, real studios did not want to pick up this shit. So it was recorded in a lot of basements with a lot of, you know, shitty studios and, like, less than favorable conditions. So the production is super duper raw and difficult to get through. How did you do with the production?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was the way you talked it up. I thought it was going to be really bad, but no, it wasn't. It wasn't awful. I thought it was interesting though. Like one of the first things I wrote down is like, yeah, it's really contrasting to the Vector.
Yes.
You know, the last album that you had picked as that was like really technical and really clean and really like
this
precise.
Is like the other end.
It's
of
like the opposite of that. It's like really lo-fi production. Mm-hmm. Like all the songs are really short. Like
yes.
There were like a bunch of like 10-minute songs on the other album. None of these were past like none of these were longer than like 3.5.
Right. And that's what early black metal and early extreme metal was all about. It was basically taking thrash and pushing it in a further direction.
Okay.
Basically taking Venom and like Motorhead and a lot of those kind of heavy metal, kind of thrashy bands, and then just giving it a little extra oomph.
Yeah, it definitely sounded thrashy. Like I could pick up on that.
And this one in particular, this is 1984, so this is before any major Slayer albums. Mm-hmm. Hell Awaits, before Rain and Blood, before Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is incredibly early as far as heavy, really fast, thrashy metal is concerned.
Yeah, definitely.
And they already had elements that were so far beyond that. The harsh, aggressive vocals. The production that was itself like really raw and aggressive in a sense.
Sure.
Like just adding that to the aggressiveness of the guitars, it just creates this like dissonant kind of feeling or atmosphere that it almost like drags you down while it's still so fast and electric. And that kind of a dissonance is like disparity is the appeal of it being such a weird you know, difficult thing to listen to for a lot of people.
Yeah, I thought that was, I like what you said about how it came before a lot of the other thrash stuff made sense to me because I was listening to it the first time and I was like, you know, it sounds kind of like, and not in a negative way, but like typical. Like it's
right.
A lot of the things were like just kind of what I would have expected.
Exactly.
For the kind of album that it was. And then that's why, you know, I saw that it was 1984 and I was like, okay, this is one of those, like, it kind of has the Seinfeld is unfunny trope.
Exactly.
Of, like, so many things on this have been done since then that it doesn't
exactly.
sound particularly cutting edge without context now.
But once you put it in the context of being one of the first.
Right.
It
really shows how influential it was, I think, because of how typical,
right,
so to speak,
right.
it sounded.
And I think from the first real song, the opening is a weird intro.
I thought that was really weird, like the intro and outro. They're named songs, like, but they're nothing. There's like they're
just like the clouds,
it's just ambient,
and it sounds like
which,
a
like,
storm or whatever.
I get like maybe opening the first track with some like kind of to set the mood or whatever, but like the opening track is 3 minutes long.
Yes.
And then when you do
that.
Get to the first real song, there's still like 10 seconds of that same like before yes. the song starts.
And it even fades out then back into it.
So I was like, what was the point of having a whole 3 minute track of that? You know, even if you wanted it to be a 3 minute uh-huh. long ambient intro, why not stick that on to the first song? Because they did it still on the first song. So I just right. thought that was interesting.
I won't necessarily defend that.
I wasn't, you know, asking
that.
You to.
No, I know. But I wouldn't sit here.
I thought it was a weird
that
choice.
That was like a good choice. I think it was a little odd, and they probably could have done without it, but it was early enough that like having an intro track in and of itself was kind of a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
So they get away with it.
You know, the outro was the same thing, but it was only like 30 seconds.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I just thought that was a strange choice. Didn't mean to derail you on
no,
what you
fine.
Were talking about. Yeah, just
yes.
that was my immediate thought when I listened to that intro.
So
like, what the hell?
The first real track,
sure,
Hades,
sure.
The riff that it comes in on, it's a lot faster than like anything else that you would have heard at that point in time by other bands, except maybe like I can't remember when Celtic Frost was in their heyday, but them and like Hellhammer are probably the only other bands that were really doing it that quickly. And it also has like it has this feeling of the kind of things you hear from bands like Motorhead, where it was really just taking that and putting it on steroids and making it incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in a weird way, one of the tropes of black metal is how inherently atmospheric it is. And even though this is such a thrashy album, it does kind of create an atmosphere of like evil and dissonance in a way. And that's something that can be difficult to catch if you're like not used to listening to that kind of music. I don't know if you felt that way at all.
Well, I liked from like the beginning, like the imagery of like the album cover is really
yeah.
cool with like the goat head,
the
kinda,
goat,
like very
just the two
very
tones,
satanic
yellow and black.
The names of all the tracks: Hades, Reaper, Necromancy. In Conspiracy with Satan. Raise
yes.
the Dead. Like, they're all, they're definitely going for that kind of creepy
right.
vibe.
And that's one of the other real tropes of black metal, or another one of them, is that embracing of evil as a concept and just pushing it as far as they can. So you have they basically took this kind of imagery from Venom, even though I've heard I don't know how true this is because I don't know a ton about Bathory outside of their music. From what I understand, their main dude Corthon, who did I believe guitar and vocals, he apparently claims to have like never heard Venom before making their music.
Yeah, I think I did read the rest of the Wikipedia article.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that.
Even though they
but
didn't
somebody
like
else
directly
said that they
rip
did.
Them off.
Like somebody else in the band said that they had listened to them and they weren't.
I don't
think
know that someone else in the
I
band.
I thought that's
it's
what
possible.
It had said on there. Like even though he denies yeah. it, somebody else was like, nah, they were definitely an influence.
Well,
like,
and you can even just listen to them. You're not familiar with Venom, but
I've heard the name, but yeah.
If you hear it and like look at the aesthetic,
you can see the comparison.
It's so
yeah,
obvious.
Yeah.
But in that way, they were one of the first bands to embrace the imagery of Satan as almost a protagonist and to push lyrical content in that evil direction, which hadn't yet been really explored. So yes, you get Hades, Reaper, in conspiracy with Satan. And when you think about 1984 specifically, it's so interesting to consider, like, that was the time of the satanic panic.
Yeah.
This is so different from, like, 2018. You know, in 2018, you can just say, "Hail Satan," in, like, school or whatever, and they'll be like, "Hey, man, maybe don't." But in 1984, like, bands, Iron Maiden, even after this, in 1986, they couldn't come to America, or they nearly got blocked from playing a tour in America because a bunch of moms got pissed about their album, The Number of the Beast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that was 2 years after these guys are writing about being in conspiracy with Satan, you know?
You know, it's funny, when you said 1984, I was just thinking, like, oh, what else is popular at that time? And the first thing that came to mind was 1984 by
Bowling
Van Halen.
For Soup? Oh,
no, Van Halen. No, like, at the specific time. That's Bowling for, that's 1985.
Oh, you're right, you're
but,
right.
No, the album, Van Halen. The album 1984, right. Jump.
Yep.
Like, it's just kind of funny to think about just that album at
the
same time.
In the same year.
Yeah. Or, like, Michael Jackson would have been really big in 84.
It really puts it into, like, context for you, you know? And this is an album, honestly, where it's hard for me to pick out specific riffs and specific instances. There are certain things that come out, but it's almost like the overall effect,
the whole thing,
is
yeah.
almost more significant than the individual riffs.
That was one of the things I was going to say as a criticism, is, like, some of the riffs felt a little, like, similar. Like,
for sure.
To the point where, like, you know, the song would fade out, the next song would kick in, and I'd be like, man, that riff that they're playing,
very similar,
is, like, damn near the same riff that was, you know, not to say that was too, that it wasn't awful, but that was one of the things I noticed. It's like, yeah, this
right.
whole, all these songs are, like, fast,
yep.
kind of songs.
And that's another, that's, you have stumbled into another trope of black metal. It all sounds the same. No, the tremolo picking.
Yeah. Yeah, very prevalent.
That is extremely important to black metal. It's a defining feature that separates it, is the use of tremolo to create, again, more of an atmosphere than an individual riff. And this is much more riffy than, like, American black metal, which is much more in that atmospheric range. But it still creates that similar effect with some of the tremolo, which, again, 1984, no one else was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the blast beats. That's another major component of it. You probably picked out, like, the speed of the drums and how up-tempo they were.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. And that's another major component of it, is, along with the tremolo picking, you get the drums that are constantly going and constantly pushing the whole soundscape forward. And that creates it to be just so, like, it's so separated from a normal riff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing I noticed they really like doing, because they did it on, like, the first three songs at least, where the drums would just hit on, like, every four, it's just like, and then it would all come back in. Like, they did that at least on the first three songs.
I'm excited to find a sound clip of that, because I'm going to find, like, three separate
instances. Yeah, because at least I want to say that they did it on Hades Reaper and Necromancy.
I'm sure that they did. Yeah, I'm remembering those parts too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely true. And I think a fair criticism is that there is some sameness to it.
Yeah.
This is their first album, though.
Sure.
So I somewhat attribute that to them, like, finding their legs.
Yeah.
And they have a later album that I like more, which is, the album is Under the Sign of the Black Mark. That one they wrote in 1986.
Okay.
And it's, in my opinion, a much more mature album, much stronger. It's a really, really good album.
Okay.
Whereas this one is much more about the influence and the overall effect, I
think. Sure. No, it makes sense.
Right. And that's why I wanted to pick this one out. I deliberated between the two. It was like, do I want to give them a really good album or a very good album that's just, you know, bigger?
Mm-hmm.
And I just went with the latter. What other notes did you have on it, though?
So let's see. I wrote down specifically, like, about the production, to get back to that, like, the some of it worked for me and some of it didn't. On Hades, like, I thought the vocals were too distant, like,
because of all the reverb.
Yeah, he sounds too far away, like he's singing in a tin can. Like, I get what they're going for, but for that one, on that track, didn't do it for me. But I thought the vocals worked really well on other songs, like Reaper,
yes,
and War. Mm. I thought kind of just the growly talking, almost speaking vocals.
Right.
It really worked on those songs for me.
Those songs too, some of those later tracks, you get more of the like AC/DC rock beat,
mm-hmm,
along with like a slowed down mid-tempo
yeah
riff.
I wrote down that I really liked Raise the Dead because of just that groove. Yeah, it was just, you're right, it's yeah funny that you even compared them to AC/DC, because I know how much you're not a fan of them necessarily.
I've calmed down from that. I used to really
just dialed
them
it back.
But yeah, black metal uses a lot of like AC/DC, not necessarily licks, mm-hmm, but drum patterns.
Yeah,
for sure.
Just the groove on the Raise the Dead was just
exactly
really, you could like really kind of head.
You could very
head
easily
to
headbang and go
tap.
Just like, yeah, brother.
Yeah.
It's like a brother kind of tempo.
So yeah, I really liked that one. I like Necromancy was the first track I wrote down as like a standout. I just thought the intro was really cool. Mm-hmm. That one sucked me in. I like the title too, because it reminds me of the Rush song, The Necromancer.
The Necromancer. Yeah, that one was on the Halloween playlist.
Yep,
both that one and The Necromancer.
And like I said about the production, where some of it worked, some of it didn't. I thought there could be more bass on this. I listened to it on a couple different, like, cause I did it.
Yeah.
I listened to it more than once, and I listened to it on some earbuds, and I listened to it on these nice over the ears that I'm wearing. And like the bass lines were good.
Yes.
And I wanted to hear more of it, but I felt like I really had to listen for the bass, so I could have stood it to be a little bass boosted, but you know,
that's
that might just be.
That's a common criticism.
They did it on purpose,
of
I'm sure.
Extreme metal, like that just comes up a lot, especially in thrash, where it's intentionally pretty trebly.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to sit in that higher range, whereas you get more bass in, you know, other kinds of metal, like in a lot of death metal and and doom, of course.
Oh yeah, that's. I think that might be one of the reasons I like the doom and sludge, just because it's so like
bass driven,
deep,
yeah,
know?
Yeah. And I there are definitely black metal bands later, like way later than Bathory, who embrace the bass a bit more.
Uh-huh.
But it's definitely like a variation of black metal in most cases, rather than like the core streamlined stuff that this
sure
is.
So yeah, I guess I can see why they did it like that and like what they were going for. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be able to hear that. I wanted to hear those bass lines better, because there was good stuff there.
Right.
It was too hard to have to pick out for me.
Yeah, I understand that for sure. And I think that overall the production is, it's one of those things where a lot of bands imitate that and they try to capture that same style,
mm-hmm,
because it's so iconic. There are a lot of lo-fi black metal bands who they could record it better, but they choose not to.
Yeah, it's definitely an aesthetic choice.
And I don't know, I get kind of split on that, because there are other ways to like make a track raw. You don't have to like intentionally make it unlistenable.
I like some lo-fi stuff though.
I do
mean,
too.
Definitely a lot of lo-fi production things. Neutral Milk Hotel, that album that we always talk about.
Yeah,
that has a lot of really like blown out acoustic guitars, and like, you know, it's kind of a pinnacle of lo-fi, at least for
indie. I totally agree with you. And I
really like that album.
I appreciate it too, but you also don't want it to be forced.
Right.
You want it to be natural and like as a consequence of the way that they're doing things,
mm-hmm,
because of like other choices or other limitations. You don't necessarily want a guy going like, okay, let me buy this shitty busted amp because that'll make a better lo-fi record, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But that's where a lot of these early bands, that's part of the appeal of them, is because they were so early in the game And because just in 1984, your recording options were so much more limited than they are today,
mm-hmm.
They naturally had to go with that kind of a production.
Well, I can't imagine they had a big budget on
exactly,
this album at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. So they had to make it work. And that's what we're left with, just this crazy kind of a mess of a production that is abrasive and almost attacks you. But that just adds to the appeal of the genre and the style that they're going to, at least in my eyes.
Yeah. So when you told me about it at first, you're like, oh, you hyped it up like I was gonna really like find it hard. And, I mean, I didn't think it was, for lack of a better term, as bad as you kind of like warned me that it would
ones.
Be. Oh, and I'm sure there are.
Yeah, I guess for me, it was probably harder to come across at first than it was for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the first time that I listened to Bathory was when I was really into prog metal for a while.
Okay, yeah.
And
not prog.
That's like pristine production these days. Typically, you can hear guitars perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And to go from that to Bathory is a huge jump, and it was a really tough one for me at first. So it took me like several tries to actually start appreciating this album.
I would really like to see somebody that's listening to these podcasts listen to Steely Dan and then put this on.
yeah, that is one thing to consider. I thought about the fact that if we have anyone listening, or just about anyone who would be listening, probably not super into abrasive extreme metal.
Well, no, that's okay. I think that's part of the point. And I mean, I think it's kind of cool to do genre swings.
That's
back
true.
And forth,
that's true. We've gotten some good swings so far.
Oh, yeah,
I'm excited
definitely.
To see what you throw at me next, because we've gone from extremely precise technical metal to an old school technical kind of rock band, and then the extreme opposite of the polished shit with, you know, this underground, these teenagers just making their black metal.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you have any other notes on this?
I didn't. So yeah, overall, I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it. It's a little bit outside of what I would normally listen to, but I definitely saw, like I said, how many other things that it kind of influenced just for how many times I'd heard things like it. You know what I mean? Things that I could tell it influenced. So
and at some
I think
point,
it was cool for that reason.
At some point, not in the near future, but at some point I'm going to, of course, send you more black metal stuff.
Yeah, we'll revisit the...
Because it's my favorite genre of metal right now, and a lot of it is very different and far removed from that first album. Like, mm-hmm. the subgenre's gone in a lot of places, so I'm going to show you some other stuff that'll... I think you'll find the differences really interesting for how the genre evolved. But I also have to give you stuff that you'll actually enjoy.
yeah, we want to change it up, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that transitions, though, into what are you thinking of sending me?
Oh, man, I've got so many things in mind, and I mean, I know if we keep doing this, I'll have opportunities to do all the other ones, too. so I guess I gave you something last time that was pretty old, pretty clean. I'm just trying to think of what... you know, I've got some examples that are, like, more modern. I've got some classic rock stuff that you're probably, like, you know, the hits, but you haven't dug into. I don't know what to give you, though. I can go extreme on you like you did on me, and I can give you something that's, like, a little bit more country.
I think you should. Maybe not country, if
all right,
if
you know
I'm
what?
Honest,
I won't go too far and too twangy. Here's the one that I was thinking about
something
giving you.
Something more challenging for me.
Yeah,
I'd be okay all right. with that.
All right, you know what I'm going to do in that case, then? I'm going to give you an Avett Brothers album, because they're not...
I had a feeling you would at
They're
some
not
point.
Country. I wouldn't classify them as country, but they're definitely country-inspired.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that you'll appreciate that they don't share in common with country is that none of the vocals are like that real Southern twangy.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
none of them sing like this. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Cause I know that's one of your turnoffs.
It definitely is.
I'm going to give you their most recent album from 2016, True Sadness.
Okay.
I'm going to do that though, because I think there's a lot of genres that they pull from for this. It's not strictly, any particular, they've got some country, more country or folk songs. They've got some more modern songs. It's produced by Rick Rubin.
Oh, okay.
Who produces
yeah,
everything.
I'm
so
well familiar.
Yep. There's the cover for you.
All right. Cool.
So
I dig it.
Yeah. We'll do that next time.
In the meantime, if you want to keep up with us and see what we're up to, we do post some stuff aside from the podcast. Like, you know, when we were at our Halloween party, I was a black metal guy and he was Mr. John Lennon. We have an Instagram for all that kind of shit, at Invisible Airwaves Cast. Come hang out, start a discussion, or you can email us. I think it's also invisibleairwavescast@gmail.com. Very possible someone has emailed us, but I got a new phone and I did not see it.
Yeah,
so
you should check.
If so, maybe we can do a mailbag at some point. That'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. So, but we'll post an ad for this on our page and all that. And then once we get it edited over, you know, a few days, we'll get it up soon. So
sometime in the future when you are receiving this message.
Yep, that's a good point. whatever. All right.
See you.